John, thank you very much for that introduction. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the next installment of the Elmer and TechNet. This net meets every week at 7:30 p.m. or following the Cabana Weekly Business Net. Elmer is a term used for those who have experience and knowledge within the amateur radio hobby and choose to share that information with those wanting to learn. While I try not to get too deep in the technical aspects of topics, we're here also to discuss for those who want more information. It is not just a newbie net. Newbies are more than welcome. Any questions will be answered. There are no stupid questions. We also encourage other operators with experience to hang out, participate, and Elmer others as well. We do need both questions and answers to make this work. Each week we switch between topics, general questions and answers. Tonight's edition is going to cover amateur satellites. I'm going to go ahead and ask for check-ins to see who's participating or listening in the ElmerNet this evening. This is not going to call anyone back. Gives me an idea of who's participating or listening and who's ready for the ElmerNet. Also, one more quick note before we get started. You can also follow along on topics, old topics actually, on the Cabana website by clicking on the ElmerNet link at kbara.org. And information from past nets will be there. If you want to follow along on the information I'm going to present, go to my webpage at www.ka7fvv.net. And now I'm ready to call for check-ins, see who's out there listening tonight.
207RWA.
WB7RED.
227 Echo Sierra, come back.
Victor Foxtrot, Quebec.
KG7 VSA.
Kilo Golf 7. Delta Romeo Charlie.
There are people out there that are preaching do full duplex if you can.
but if you're starting out and you've got one handheld, you can do half duplex and it will work just fine. Some of the popular ones, I've used a ICOM W32A for quite a few years with good results. You got to flip between VFOs. Some of the newer ones, like those of us that have like the ID51 D-Star handhelds, you've got to flip between two VFOs. You got to transmit on one, and then you got to tune for Doppler on your receive one. It's just like with SO50, or you've got to tune for Doppler on the uplink. Some that make things a little easier, the Belfang handhelds, the Waxon handhelds. You can program transmit and receive into the same memory. Yaesu handhelds, a popular one is the FT60. You can program your transmit and receive in the same memory channel. I've got an FT1DR Yaesu Fusion handheld, and you can do that if you use Chirp. You can program the transmit and receive into one memory channel. So those are radios that are quite popular for satellite, work well for satellite. Some of them just take a little more fiddling if you had to switch between VFOs for Doppler shift correction. Like the Yaesu handhelds or the Baofangs, you can program that Doppler shift that you need either for uplink or downlink into the different memory channels, and you're just switching channels instead of switching VFOs, so works pretty good. Next thing you need is a gain antenna. There are a couple commercial antennas available. The Elk antenna and the Arrow antenna are available commercially for satellite use. The Elk is, I think, a little cheaper than the Arrow. There's no duplexer involved. Just has a set of elements that screw onto the main antenna. Makes it easy. It's easy to hold, although your arms always gets tired with, you know, no matter what antenna you've got that you're holding if you're, you know, working outside with it. And then the Arrow, you can get it with a 10-watt duplexer. They both work very well. I've got both of them, worked with both of them. Or you can homebrew your own. On my webpage there, I've got information on homebrewing a coat hanger antenna, which I built one. That works pretty well. Gave that away at the Hamfest, matter of fact. So whichever way you want to go, if you've already got the handheld and just need the antenna, either one of the commercial ones or homebrew one yourself, and there's quite a few different links out on the internet as far as homebrewing a dual band satellite antenna. And this is KE7FVV, host of the ElmerNet this evening. And you can have some limited luck with a gain rubber duck antenna. I've talked through several satellites with those, latest one being SO50, actually made it work. Works better with the satellites that are a little easier to hear. They did actually make one contact through SO50 with extended rubber duck, you know, higher gain rubber duck antenna, so it can be done. I've done it on some older satellites that were had better receive gain and had higher output, so they were easier to hear. I have not tried it yet with the new AO85 or LilacSat, although I've used my house antennas and the Elk antenna for at least on LilacSat. Haven't tried portable yet on AO85. So, but it can be done. If you've got one of those, you can certainly listen and you know, see if you're hearing the satellite with that antenna. But it's certainly not out of the question, so it's fun to try anyway. All right, got the hardware portion out of the way. Now we'll talk about software and what satellites we're looking for. Quite a few different options for software for tracking satellites. One of the most popular for the PC is going to be Orbitron. It's free and easy to use. There are, you know, several other software options for the PC. Nova for Windows, it's a pay version. AMSAT has a version that you can pay for. I've played with both of those, and I always go back to Orbitron. It's certainly easy to use and gives you nice predictions, and you can print those out and have them with you if you go outside to make your satellite contacts. Mobile devices, both Android and iOS, have several different options available. Probably the best one for Android is ISS Detector. If you pay less than $3, you can get all the information to attract additional satellites other than ISS. And there's also AMSAT Droid Free, which is also a good tracking software for the Android. Several different options for iOS. Break here just a minute. It is a pay app, but I always seem to use that probably 99% of the time. There's others called Hamsat, ProSat. There is a Freeland Sat Explorer Pro for iOS. I think that might be also available for Android as well. But those are the main ones for iOS, and all of them work quite well. One thing nice about GoSat Watch, it has its own alarm system for you know, when the satellite passes close, and you can set it for, you know, 5 minutes, 1 minute to warn you when the satellite's coming above the horizon. So those are your options for satellite tracking, and what those are going to give you is LOS, or AOS, LOS, and then most of them, if you do a printout, like the Orbitron from the computer, is going to give you halfway through the pass what the azimuth and elevation is going to be. So you got to know where the satellite is going to come above the horizon, the path through the sky, and then where it's going to go below the horizon again. And all of these programs will give you that information. And if you've got your mobile device with you outside, you can actually track it as you're communicating. So if you have it set up, I've got a tripod set up with my aero antenna. I can put my phone on it, to cut the radio on it, and you get that fancy, and you can have your phone right there and track it as it goes across the sky. So several different options that you can do. Tell you what, I'll stop there for a minute. Let me holler out and see if there's any questions on what I have covered so far. Quite a bit of information I've thrown out there. Anybody have any questions so far?
KG7SAR, please repeat your call sign slowly. Over.
I'll even give it to you phonetically. Kilo Alpha 7, Foxtrot Victor Victor.
Roger that. Thank you.
Not a problem. I tend to rattle it off fairly quickly. Now we got hardware and software. Talk about the different satellites, and then also going to talk about programming of your radios as well, real quick. We've got three satellites up there right now. The one that has been up there for the longest, it's I think this December coming up on 13 years and still going strong, is SO50 or SaudiSat-1C. You'll see it listed in some of the element sets. 13 years, still going strong, and doesn't show any signs of stopping anytime soon. Hopefully not, anyway. And it was our only FM satellite for a couple years. We had failure of a couple of them here in the last 2-3 years. So, and it's taken that long to get another satellite up, and actually, the first one that went up, the next FM satellite that went up, the latest one, is actually back in two of them in the last 2 months. Back in September was a Chinese launched satellite, LILAC-SAT-2, and then in October, AMSAT, who built the replacement for AO-51 that failed us here about, I think it's 3 years ago here in December, they launched Fox 1A, which quickly became AMSAT Oscar 85. So we now have three FM satellites at our disposal that we can play with, and they're all functioning very well. If you look at my website, you'll see all the information on there. I also have a cheat sheet at the bottom of the FM group on my webpage, where you can go and it'll show you the frequencies that you need to program into your radio. And I'll talk about it here in a little bit, but we won't let International Space Station get away from us, but they have a VHF uplink and downlink for voice when they're active on voice, and then the APRS packets is also active on VHF most of the time. So you can actually hear that APRS packet most of the time on the space station when it flies over. Kind of fun to watch it fly over and listen to the packet at the same time. Talk about satellite modes a little bit real quick. Talked earlier where you have to have a dual band handheld or two radios to be able to work the satellites. One of them has to be VHF, one of them has to be UHF, because they are split between the VHF and UHF bands. Depending on the mode, got VU, which is VHF uplink and UHF downlink, or VHF transmit and UHF receive, or UV, which is UHF uplink or transmit and VHF downlink and receive. So those are the two modes that we're dealing with satellites. SO50 is VU, and so is LILACSAT, and AO85 is just the opposite, UV. Okay, 7FVV for ID, continuing. On the UHF side, you have to adjust for Doppler shift. In other words, when the satellite comes above the horizon, the frequency is going to be approximately 10 kilohertz higher than the center frequency, and then it'll be right on the center frequency when it's at time of closest approach or highest elevation on the path, and then the frequency will start going lower. And that's quite evident if you're listening to, say, SO50, and if you try to listen to the center frequency that's published at the start of the pass, you will not hear anything. So you have to set your radio up to be able to track that Doppler on SO50 and LILACSAT on the UHF downlink, and then you have to actually do the adjust for the UHF uplink on AO85. So it's a little trickier. It's actually a little nicer to adjust for the downlink than it is for the uplink, but it works. There's a AGC on AO85 that kind of helps adjust for that Doppler, so not quite so critical as you think it might be. And get back to programming radios, that's why it's nice to have, you're going to have probably five channels for each satellite that you're going to program, so you can adjust for that Doppler shift. So either if you're doing dual VFOs, you'll have a VHF either receive or transmit, depending on what satellite you're on. And then if it's AO85, you're going to have UHF transmit, and the VHF will stay the same. You don't have to adjust for Doppler on VHF. It's not enough of a shift at the VHF frequency where you have to worry about it. The 5 kilohertz bandwidth for the VHF is enough that it adjusts for that Doppler shift, and you don't even notice anything. But UHF is a little different, so you certainly get that Doppler shift. So about five frequencies per satellite, and you should be set for the hardware side of it as far as getting ready to receive the satellite. Software set up, you know where that satellite's going to be. You need to make sure that your what they call Keplerian elements are up to date in your satellite software, tracking software. The ones that for mobile devices, any of those update automatically. So does Orbitron. You got to tell it to update automatically, and it'll update every so many days. I think I've got mine set to update every, like, 4 days. So if you don't run it for a little bit, window will pop up, and it'll download all of the elements fresh, and you know you have the latest information. So thing with satellites, you got to keep your elements up to date so that you don't have bad data, and you're not trying to listen to a satellite that isn't there because you you have wrong data and your time's off. So that's another thing too, make sure your time is correct, location's correct in your satellite tracking software, or it will not be able to give you accurate data. Take a short break there and see if anybody has any questions. That's KA7FD. Must be explaining things fairly well. All right. Well, now that we got everything set up, got your, you know when the satellite's going to be above the horizon, whichever one you're gonna try. If you're running portable, 20-degree elevation pass or higher are going to be your best bet for trying it, especially first time, so you don't get frustrated with the low elevation pass. So 20 degrees or higher is a good rule of thumb, you know, for your passes. So have everything set up. Maybe even your first pass or so, listen to the satellites. Make sure you can hear the satellites with your setup. I hear people quite often. Heard one the other day, station the other day on SO50 that kept calling CQ. You usually do not call CQ on the satellites. You can do, you know, Q or Z, or, you know, or just put your call out there as well with the information, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But he could not hear people coming back to him. I went back to him several times, several other stations, so he could not hear the satellite with his setup. So make sure you can hear the satellite. So there's always activity on these satellites. You should be able to hear something. So make sure listen first, and then you can talk. Make sure that you can hear the satellite downlink. Very important. Two of the satellites also require a PL tone. SO50 and AO85 both require a 67 hertz tone. If you happen to catch SO50 off, it has a 10-minute timer on it. Then you have to transmit with a 74.4 hertz tone. I've found it off quite a bit, like when it has on a pass coming down from Alaska. Not a lot of people in Russia and then Alaska working it, so I've had to turn it on several times. But most of the time, the satellite's going to be on by the time it comes above the horizon, and you shouldn't have to worry about turning it on. There have been times during halfway through the pass I've actually had to switch and turn SO50 back on, so, because it does have that 10-minute timer. So those two require a PL tone, transmit PL tone, be able to work through them. LILAC-SAT-2 does not, no requirement for a PL tone. KA7FVV continuing. Just do some familiarization with your satellite tracking programs. Know your cardinal directions. Some of them, you know, we'll give it to you in degrees. Others just east, west, north, south, northwest. But, you know your cardinal directions. You know, east, west, north, south for the basics, and then for degrees as well, because you're going to see both published. So, and then of course, there's no magnetic headings for satellite azimuth. 0 is due north, 180 is due south, so there's no magnetic correction, and Elevation, of course, is zeros at the horizon, and 90 degrees is straight overhead. So, and you're going to have satellite passes anywhere in between all directions in the sky. So, important to get used to pointing your antenna. It's not, you know, doesn't have to be pinpoint accurate, but you're going to move your antenna around for, you know, best receive signal anyway, but at least get a good idea of your directions, where you're pointing, where the arc of the satellite pass is going to come across the sky. So all that's very, very important to kind of get used to with working amateur satellite. One more time, I'll stop, see if anybody's got any questions. KA7FQ. Talk about the exchange contact you're going to have on the satellite. Keep in mind, satellite passes are short. You're looking 10, 15 minutes at the most, and that would be for an overhead pass, because these are low Earth orbit, or LEO as they're known, low Earth orbit satellites. So you're going to have 10 to 15 minute passes. At the most, so a lot of contacts are going to be going on very quickly. Every once in a while, you can chat with somebody and, you know, have a short conversation. I did yesterday on SO50. You get somebody you know, you're going to contact a lot of the same people on the satellites, which is fun. Talk to them over and over again, they get to know each other, so that's a lot of fun in the satellite community. But there have been a lot of new people on the satellites as well, so nice to see newcomers. Your contacts are usually short. Listen to the contacts, like I say, for a while. Make sure you can hear the satellite downlink. You're going to hear a call sign, and then you're going to hear a grid square. And you can collect those grid squares for awards if you want. Put them on a map. If you scroll down my satellite page, you'll notice a grid square map that I have compiled over the time I've been doing satellites. And some of them I've got them colored for ones I've talked with sideband birds, and others with FM birds, and some of them with a combination of both in the same grid square. So, but you'll hear the call sign and then grid square. Here in Spokane, we're Delta November 17, so DN17. You're going to hear all kinds of different ones across the country. KA7FBB. You can just jump in with your call sign, or you can call a specific station. If you just jump in with your call sign and your grid square, I guarantee that you will get people coming back to you. So you don't have to call a specific station unless you want to, or if you're not hearing anything on the satellite, if the satellite's quiet, knowing that you actually can hear the satellite downlink, got that part out of the way, you can just do QRZ, you know, and like I do KA7FBV, Delta November 17. Or sometimes a satellite will come above the horizon, I'll say, you know, anybody on the satellite this morning, give my call sign and grid square, so you'll get somebody to come back to you, I guarantee it. So that's basically the exchange you're going to hear on the satellites. Like I say, most contacts are quick. Some satellite passes are very busy, and it makes it hard to get a word in edgewise, but if you got an opening, try to go ahead and throw out your call sign and get people to come back with you and start making contacts on satellite. All right, that about covers it for the FM sats, and they are very easy to work, or they call them easy sats. I'd say most of us probably have the hardware that we need to work them, maybe not the antenna for sure, but get an antenna and get your handheld programmed for the appropriate frequencies, and PL tones on two of them. Don't forget to program the PL tones. That could be frustrating if you don't have the PL tones programmed for AO85 and SO50, and that'll keep you from getting in and cause a frustration. Back off and ask if there's any questions on the FM satellites.
7AAT with a comment.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, to be honest with you, Scott, you know, you and I have both worked a number of the SATs, and we've done them together, and, well, to be honest, you lost me with a little bit of the stuff that you're way over ahead of me, but I did want to throw in that there was the one time that we had a couple of satellites when I was living up in Spokane that Scott and I got the schedule all set up. And him and I were lived about maybe 3 miles, 4 miles apart in Spokane. And we worked, I don't know which one it was now, we might have worked FO-29 as it passed over. Him and I were talking through that satellite back and forth between it and where we lived. And then on the next pass, it was either the same one or maybe SO-50. I can't remember now, but, yeah, you can set up schedules just like on an HF contact through a satellite with somebody and talk to somebody either next door or across the street or down the road or across the country. And that's one thing that makes it fun because the satellites are going to possibly be over your house and their house, and you can set up a schedule to work the satellite between you and your buddy on the other side of the country as it's passing over. And Scott and I did that one day, and that was a lot of fun. As a matter of fact, I think I've got those QSL cards hanging on the wall, Scott. Hey, good job, KD7AAT.
Yep, I remember that. I did that with you. I've done that with Duff. I think we figured that day we were, you know, live 3 or 4 miles apart, and I think we made about a, 3,000-mile trip going through the satellite. It's a lot of fun to do that, though. But, yeah, he's right. You can set up those schedules. You can talk across the country, even on an FM satellite, so get the pass just right and get somebody over there. This guy I've talked to over in Virginia several times on SO-50, so it is possible to talk across the country. So it is a lot of fun, that's for darn sure. So one more time, throw out for questions. Anybody got questions on the FM sats? And then I'll cover sideband sats a little bit real quick.
EFS with a question about CubeSats.
Go right ahead.
Are CubeSats some that are coming up in your presentation? If so, I'll wait until then. But I understand these things are launched in clusters, or at least they're launched with clusters, but then when they are released, are they released in clusters, and do each of these CubeSats have their own frequency?
Yes, yes, and yes. Well, CubeSat is the standard anymore for satellite construction. Some people still adhere to it, like the two new ones that are up there, LilacSat, built by the Chinese, is not a CubeSat. It's larger. AO-85 is a CubeSat, and that has become a standard that actually came about from Cal Poly University down in California. Matter of fact, they have, seminars or symposiums every year on CubeSat building and information on CubeSats. But came about mainly for the fact that some of our old satellites were big, heavy, and it became increasingly expensive to launch large satellites just due to the weight. And so CubeSats came about to help alleviate that weight issue, make it cheaper to launch
they come in different sizes. There's a 1U, 2U, and 3U CubeSat. Okay, 7FVV. BO85 is a 1U CubeSat, basically 4 inches square is the size of that. So 10 centimeters or 4 inches, depending on whether you want to use metric or English, is a 1U CubeSat. So there's many CubeSats in orbit, but AO85 is one of them. Start talking about sideband satellites in a moment. The FunCube 1 is a 1U CubeSat, so 4 by 4 by 4 inches. That's been in orbit for a couple of years now. It's a single sideband or linear transponder. But they also have, there's also a 1.5U CubeSat, so what, maybe 6 inches tall by 4 by 4. Two of those would be 8 inches by 4 by 4, and then a 3U CubeSat is basically 3 of those stacked on top of each other. You know, 4 by 4 is the looking down at the top of it is the dimensions. They just get longer. The 1U, 1.5, 2, or 3U CubeSats. And there are many of all of those configurations in orbit currently anyway. And that CubeSat technology has continued to blossom. You can go online and look for CubeSats. You can buy the CubeSat stuff already built. A lot of places will, buy the space frame and build up the boards that go in it. You don't have a whole lot of room to do too much, although on the AMSAT satellites, they not only have amateur radio, but they have educational stuff on board as well, which is a requirement for them to get a free ride into space via the ALANA program with the United Launch Alliance. And a lot of, the AMSAT satellites have been launched via that program. FOX 1A, aka, AO85 was one of them, of course. And there's several others coming up. Some of them coming up, though, they are going to have to pay for. They do have some, raising some money now for launch of FOX 1 C and D, I believe it is, that's going to go up via SpaceX, I think this next spring. So we'll see once they get back to flying again how that happens. KA7FVV. I have to remember if I have a link on my website, but when FOX 1 was launched, AO85, and this has happened on other United Launch Alliance launches as well, and it happens on the space station, and I did not talk about the space station. I'll do that here in a minute as well. They launch them via what they call a P-Pod launcher, which is spring-loaded. It will hold one 3U CubeSat or 3 1U CubeSats in one P-Pod launcher. So it's big enough to take that 4x4-inch satellite. They just push it down on a spring and then close the door, and then it can be remotely, the door can be remotely opened when they want to launch those satellites, and then the spring just pushes those satellites out into space. In case of the United Launch Alliance and like the launch that AO85 was on, there was a box affixed to the bottom of the second stage rocket, and it had, I believe, 9 of those P-Pods in it, and they were all filled with satellites. So there were quite a few satellites that were launched that day aboard of that rocket. And once they got to the spot where they wanted to actually deploy them, then they just remotely opened the doors of those P-Pod launchers, and it would shoot those out. Matter of fact, I think on my homepage I have a link of AO85's launch being launched out of that P-Pod launcher. They have video of that. So, and they do the same thing on the space station from the Japanese module. On the robotic arm, they'll got a platform that has like three of these T-pod launchers on it, and then they can remotely launch those from in ISS to launch CubeSats from ISS as well. Take a break here to get a drink of water and make sure that answered everybody's questions. K87FD.
Thank you, W7EFS.
KE7FCB continuing. They have discovered, though, especially in the case of FinCube, the little satellites don't give you a lot of space in there for a heat sink. They have some heat buildup in FinCube and some major frequency drift, so it's been a little tough on them, but finding a few issues like that because you don't have too much satellite there to, not a whole lot of space frame as a heat sink. Even though it's cold up there, some of those satellites still build up quite a bit of heat. All right, chat about sideband CW satellites real quick. We've got several that are operational. FO29, still operational, up and running, quite strong. Oscar 7, AO7, it is operational in daylight only. It was launched back in 1974, November of 74, dead for quite a few years, and then came back to life in daylight hours, so I'm not exactly sure what happened with that satellite, but I've made several contacts through that, and nice to have it back among the sideband satellites. And then FunCube 1, or AO73, I was just talking about, is a CubeSat, and you can actually decode the telemetry from that very easily if you have a sideband receiver. But that's what you need for, that's the problem with the sideband burns, it takes a little more hardware, so you need a radio that is capable of sideband. Nice to have two radios. Makes it a little tough to do half duplex on the sideband birds, but I know people that have. But usually you're doing full duplex on the sideband birds, so you can hear your downlink. So you're operating the sideband birds with a pair of headphones on usually, and you're usually tune your uplink, keep your downlink centered. Although most everybody on the birds are using the computer tracking, so both the uplink and downlink are being tracked and to keep track of the conversation. So Doppler shift is a little more pronounced on sideband than it is on FM for both VHF and UHF. So you're tuning both bands. Again, they are dual band, either UV or VU, but again, we're talking about sideband, and most of them have CW beacons that you can try to hear if you have a sideband CW receiver on VHF or UHF. KE7FBV. You might add also, there is a flock of six satellites called XW-2, and there's six of them that were also launched with LILAC-SAT-2, the Chinese satellite, back in September. Actually, I just heard three of the six CW beacons tonight on those, so at least three of those are alive and well. A couple of them I didn't hear any beacon on, but they have the sideband or linear transponders on them as well. I didn't hear anything on the downlink, so not sure what's happening with those satellites. But so there's six more sideband satellites that went up with LILAC-SAT back in September. I don't have that information on my website. I'll be putting that on there later on. But those were added to the sideband satellite community. So got a few more sideband satellites. If they're alive and well and have them turned on for operation, those can be used as well. So, but the thing with sideband, it takes a little more equipment. You can work sideband birds with like the elk and the arrow antenna. I know people that do and have, and they'll travel around the country, and you do grid squares again, just like you do on FM satellites. And some people will travel around and work from different grids, in the area where they live, on both FM and sideband satellites, and collect grid squares that way. So, but also can be done on sideband sat. So, any other questions about any of the satellite stuff? KA7FPV. Please take a look at my website at www.ka7fbv.net. Go to my satellite page, a lot of information there. That's kind of a long page, but keep scrolling down. There's a lot of information on radios, antennas, and some very interesting links that you can go to, both attached to the satellites and just some general links further on down. So there'd be a lot of information in there to absorb. And I hope you guys try FM satellites one of these days. Alright, put out a call for questions one more time. Let's see if I can answer anything for anybody.
But you've got an uplink of 435.080
and that would correspond with a downlink of 145.930, not taking Doppler shift into effect. So the uplink of that bird goes from 435.080 to 435.060, and it's an inverting transponder, so the high end of the UHF is the low end of the VHF up downlink, so 145.930 to 145.950. Some sats are inverting for UHF and others aren't, so gotta just know the satellite. So that's just what the satellite's built to for communications. That part of the band is built into that satellite. So that's how that works.
And then the Echo Oscar 79, they may be activated in the summer fall of 2015. Is that currently activated, please?
No, I have no confirmation of that. They tested it, but no confirmation that it's active yet. Also, EO80, if you look up in the FM section, that has a FM that satellite has an FM transponder, so it'd be nice to have that up and running as well. But I have no confirmation that that's been activated either. So I've tried to communicate with their control station back in, I think they're in the Netherlands. I've gotten one email back from them at one time, but then nothing else since. But they don't seem to communicate with the amateur community too well as to what they're doing with the satellite.
Alrighty, again, thank you so much, W7EFS.
KD7EFS. Hard to explain, but hopefully I explained it good enough. Everybody understood what I was talking about. All right, do another call for any questions that anybody might have.
KD7AAT.
Southern California, go right ahead.
Yeah, Scott, the weather satellites like the NOAA's are around 500 miles up, and they circle above and fast enough to where they never have a problem coming back down, and that gets a little technical, but we'll get into that another day. The LEO satellites like FO-29, all the HAMSATs, the CubeSats, and so on and so forth, which is called the LEO, are they still made? And, well, first of all, how high are they? And are they made to, at a certain point in their life, they're going to come back down where, like the NOAA's, they're going to stay up there forever?
We're talking about now will never come down. I mean, we have many dead amateur satellites up there that will never re-enter. The ones launched from ISS, those will eventually, which reminded me, I need to talk about ISS for a minute, those will come down. And the reason for that, well, even ISS would come down if they didn't correct the orbit every once in a while, because they do have atmospheric drag up at 250, 260 miles above the Earth. But what happens is when they launch the ones from ISS, they shoot them backwards and down, so they won't come back around and collide with the space station. They call it retrograde, and so those eventually succumb to atmospheric drag and burn up. Usually takes about 6 months. Approximately, but our other FM satellites are high enough up to where they're not going to come down, not made to come down. They'll just add to the space junk that's up there. Like AO85 is like 414 miles. Lilac Sat's up 331 miles, and SO50 is up at 442 miles. So those will never come down and re-enter.
Okay, and that's what I was kind of getting at. There's a certain a height around with their orbit, and it's not necessarily the speed, it's just their orbit height that they're traveling around the Earth that they keep shooting and falling, shooting and falling, and they never fall back in.
KE7FPV. I'm not sure exactly what the altitude is of a point of no return. ISS altitude at 260 is certainly a point where it will, you know, come back to Earth. I mean, they certainly proved that with the Mir space station. And like I say, satellites launched from there will always re-enter. But yeah, somewhere above them, you know, maybe 300 miles up, you know, that might be the spot to where it'll stay there and never come down. But I can't say for sure.
Well, the only part that we hope is they keep circling and the solar panels and the batteries last long enough to be able to work them for many years. And, yeah, I've worked a number of them. I got a lot more to work. And with all the information that you have and your website, which is just fantastic, and anyone out there that's interested in anything to do with amateur satellites, weather or otherwise, definitely get on to Scott's website, and he keeps it up to date with a lot of information. Hey, great job, Scott. Super. You lost me, and I've worked a number of satellites and thought I knew something, but you buried me tonight for sure. KD7AAT.
John, also you reminded me that I need to talk about ISS real quick here, too. Amateur radio has been in our space program for quite a few years. I think it was, I can't remember the date exactly, but back in the 80s, I believe it was, but Owen Garriott did the first amateur radio contacts from ISS, was or not ISS, from the space shuttle, which was a kick in the pants. We've had amateur radio in the space program, aboard the shuttle multiple times, and now permanently aboard ISS, and known as ARISS, or amateur radio on ISS. They do have voice capabilities, downlink of 145.800 with a very wide VHF offset. In our part of the world, it's a minus 1.31 megahertz split. So some of the older radios probably can't do that if you're stuck at 600, but a lot of the newer ones, all the newer ones can. And they also transmit on packet at 145.825 megahertz. And that's what's active most of the time. If they've got spacecraft coming or going or doing spacewatch, that will be turned off. And they are active on voice very rarely. Every once in a while you can catch them on voice, but they do a lot of school contacts on voice. You know, we got more hams up there than we have had in a while, so the possibility of maybe catching them on voice is a little higher, but hopefully you can. Sometimes field days, they're active. They were not active this last field day, but year before last, they were. So kind of fun to try to catch them on voice. I've talked to one ham on voice on ISS, so break here just a minute. KE7FPV continuing. You can operate through ISS on packet on 145.825 if you have a TNC laying around, and your call will show up on the ISS herd map on the internet, so that's kind of fun to do as well. If you have a Yaesu or Kenwood handheld that has TNC built in, like my Yaesu Fusion FT1DR, it has APRS built into it, and I have successfully digipeded through ISS with my handheld and my aerial antenna, so that's kind of fun to do. So you can do that as well, but it's kind of fun to listen to the 145.825 packet and watch ISS fly over if you get a favorable pass in the evening. So anyway, that's information on ISS. If somebody else has some questions, let me know. KA7FTV.
Go right ahead. This is Casey, 7 degrees. I've been wanting to work the ISS, or tried to, but I've got the UQFP 857 Delta, and I was just wondering,
okay, you're trying to work them on voice or work them on packet?
Voice.
So you can put ISS in a tracking program. Just like we talked about, you know, tracking the other satellites, FM sats, and wait for a good pass, and just tune to that 145.800 frequency. So you have that programmed into your radio already, with that minus 1.31 megahertz offset, and also have 145.825 programmed into your radio. 95% of the time, the packet's what's active, and you know, you may catch them on voice. Keep in mind, ISS crew keeps a schedule of GMT time, and they end up their bedtime is about 4 p.m. Central Time here in the U.S. So 2 p.m. Pacific is about the time they're heading to bed. So got to catch them sometime before that, but you know, on a good pass, try to listen to 145.825 if you hear packet. You know, they're not active on voice. If you don't hear it, switch over to voice. You might just catch them. I mean, that's how I talked to Mike Fink one time. I just happened to catch him. You know, didn't hear anything on packet. Switch over to voice, and there he was talking to people. So you know, sometimes you just catch them random playing with the radio. Yeah, 145.825 is the packet frequency. Like I say, that's active probably 95% of the time. The voice frequency is 145.800 with a minus 1.31 megahertz offset. So 144.490 would be your transmit frequency. Split, a minus 1.31 megahertz split. So your transmit frequency for our part of the world is 144.490.
144.490. If you just program the program your offset for that memory to minus 1.31, it should take care of it for you.
Thanksgiving and a good holiday weekend. 7-3.